is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dr. Bob Grzanik from the Energetic Sports Lab, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we're going to talk some NBA. We're going to take a slightly different slash new approach. We're going to look at the top four teams in each conference and whether or not we believe their position in the standings is real or imaginary and whether they'll be able to stay there throughout the season. And then we're going to look at the bottom four teams in each conference and basically say, is there losing for real or will they be able to somehow climb out of the cellar? So that's, I think, where we're going to start, Jay, unless you have, you told me you have a new game.
So we talked about, we did the starters last week and then I realized, you know what? That's kind of played at this point. We've done a lot of it. So I was trying to come up with something to come up to do. And ultimately in the NBA, what matters, Mike?
Wins and losses.
Wins and losses. Okay. So I've decided that we're not going to talk about players and the most wins they have, but we're going to talk about a specific team and the greatest player on all time on each team based on win shares. Now you might say, what's a win share? Well, I have a definition for you, Mike. Are you ready for the definition?
Okay.
A win share is a measure that is assigned to players based on their offense, defense, and playing time. Win shares 48 minutes is win shares per 40 minutes invented by Justin Kubatko, who explains that win share is worth one third of a team win. If a team wins 60 games, there are 180 win shares to distribute among the players. All right. So that's what a win share is. I picked a random team and it's a team that's near and dear to your heart. The Denver Nuggets. Okay. And I've written down the top five players in Nugget history. The highest win share totals.
Okay.
And your job is to try, and you don't need to tell me the order.
Okay.
Your job is to try to come up with the top five based on win share totals of all time. Now, they had to have played, the only things that counts is the years that they played for the Nuggets. So anything like, for example, all the years.
And this is a one year statistic, or this is cumulative across their career?
I believe that this is cumulative across their career.
So does a player get more credit for playing more seasons with that team?
I would say that would be a fair assessment.
Okay.
But it also gives you more credit. It gives you more credit for having like good statistical analysis on offense and defense. So you have to defense plays a role on it.
Understood. So you're telling me there's not that many Paul Westhead Denver Nuggets on there?
I don't know what year Paul Westhead was the coach. So
when they, well, anyway, okay. All right, so I'm trying to come up with five guys from the Nuggets that have the highest win share totals in their career.
Yes.
Okay. Jokic.
Jokic is number three, Mike.
Okay. So I'm one for one.
Yes.
Give me who? Alex English.
He is number two.
Okay. Give me Fat Lever.
Fat Lever is not in the top five. Fat Lever, I'm trying to see. I don't even know if Fat... Hold on. Fat Lever is eight.
Okay. Give me... How late? How far back does this go?
One of the people I'd never heard of before, Mike.
Dan Issel?
Well, Dan Issel I'd heard of, and he was number one, actually.
Okay. All right, so I've got three of the top five and four of the top... I got four of the top eight. So there's still a guy on here you've never heard of.
There's still a guy on here I've never heard of.
Okay. Whew, it gets a little tough now. I'm trying to think of Denver Nuggets. Man. Carmelo?
Carmelo is six.
Ooh, right outside the top. Man. Chauncey Billups didn't play long enough for the Nuggets to, I don't think, be included in that group. I would have to guess.
Chauncey Billups is not even in the top 12.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't think so. He didn't play long enough for the Nuggets. I don't think he was at his peak when he was with Denver.
One son is in the NBA currently.
One son, what do you mean?
I'm saying someone who's on your list, son is in the NBA currently, I believe. If I'm not incorrect here.
I'm trying to think of... It's not really a ringing endorsement. I'm not sure I'd come up with any more great Denver Nugget players.
His nickname was Skywalker.
Oh, David. David Thompson.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. All right. So that's number five. So that's all of them, right?
No, that was number four. No, that was number four. Number five, I can't give you any hint because I don't know anything about this man. All right, let's see if I can give you a nickname here. Hold on. Oh, no. I went back on accident. Hold on. Sorry. This guy's... He doesn't even have a nickname. He was born in January of 1945.
So he would have played with the Nuggets in the... early 70s.
He played 700 in his career. He played 747 games, and all of his games. This does include when they were before they when they were part of the ABA.
They have to be in the.
And he played the whole career.
Artis Gilmore never played for the Nugget.
He was drafted by the Bulls, but never played for the Bulls.
Gilmore played for the Kentucky Colonels at one point.
He went to college, the Denver College. He's got Denver
College. I got nothing, man.
He's got a pretty good stash.
My brain is fried. He's got a good stash.
His initials. Do you want his initials?
Sure.
B.B.
B.B. I got nothing, man.
Byron Beck.
I have no idea who that is. I've never heard of him.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that was the one. I'm impressed that you never heard of that guy. So
never heard of Byron Beck.
Okay, so to round out the top 12, just so you know. So Byron Beck was five. Carmelo was six. Seven is Nene.
Okay.
Eight was Fat Lever. Nine... Well, number nine is Bobby Jones.
Okay.
Number 10 is Dikembe.
Okay.
Number 11 is Ty Lawson.
Okay.
And number 12 is Dave Robish.
Dave Robish. Nice. He was a former Cavalier.
There you go. So at one point. I thought that was a little bit of an interesting little...
No Nikolai Skidishvili?
Nope. Oh, I only have the top 12. I only have the top 12 here.
I don't think Skidishvili, you could probably go down to the top 150. I don't think he makes it, but anyway, all right, that was...
Is that a little interesting? Do you like that
one? Yeah, that was good. Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting as we go through. If we do all the teams, there'll be some that'll be easier than others and some that'll be harder than others. There'll be some that will be hard to narrow it down, unlike the Nuggets, which it was hard to come up with even five. So, yeah, that was a good game.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to, like, look at these and find them. So that's, I don't want you to go doing that.
I won't do that. Yeah, don't worry.
I won't do that. I didn't think you would, but.
Yeah, you won't. I won't do that.
All right. And I'm looking at the Cavs. I think that one will be an easy one. Be an easy one for us, or for you.
Right. Well, we can leave that one for the end of the season.
Yeah, we'll leave that one for some time in the future. So, all right. So, I think, like you said, we're going to talk about the teams that are the top and the bottom. And I think we're going to start in the East, Mike, because that makes the most sense, because we're Eastern Conference people.
All right.
But I want to say this. I think the NBA needs to employ the strategy of starting their games like they started last night. That was awesome. Completely awesome that every 15 minutes there was a game starting. I think that was pretty cool. Do you agree? Disagree?
No, that was cool. I mean, they're not going to do that all the time.
I know. They should consider. This is what they should consider doing. You know how, like, NFL has the Red Zone Network, and I know they kind of did that a little bit last year on the app, but if they were to space these out when all the teams are playing, like, a perfect example of this would be, like, on MLK Day, okay, when they have, like, to do the celebrations, you have all 30 teams play, and instead of doing every 15 minutes, you start at 1 o'clock, and you start every half an hour starting a game. You go like 1:30, 2:30. You know what I mean? Like, that would be cool. That would be awesome.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think that could be fun. The NBA, it seems like they could probably do that. Although, again, when you start talking about the different markets and coordinating schedules and making sure that games aren't starting too late on the East Coast or too early on the West Coast, you start getting into all kinds of challenges.
Listen,
there's
people that make millions of dollars for the NBA. I think they can figure it out, Mike.
I'm sure they can, but I'm just saying, I think there are considerations to be made, but I do think it was fun, and I do think that it's something that they could do on
special
occasions. You do it once or twice a season. I do think it was fun to be able to check all those games.
And the gamblers probably enjoyed it a lot, right?
Probably.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you listened to Simmons and Sal. They were really excited about it because they were like, Cousin Sal hosted like I don't know what he did, like something live, and they bet on who's the first team in each game to get to 10 points for all 15 games.
There you go.
That was just pretty interesting. So, anyways, so moving to the Eastern Conference, I think, and I don't want to like paint this with a broad stroke, but like looking at the top four teams in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Boston, Atlanta, at this point, and I know, you know, Milwaukee lost last night. The Cavs blew it last night. Boston has only lost two games to us. I feel pretty confident that these top three teams are legit at this point. And, like, Milwaukee is a no-doubter to me. I think they're probably the best team in the East. And I don't think there's anyone close. I think Boston's legit. And from what I've seen from Cleveland, despite the collapse last night, it's back-to-back. They had won eight in a row. They inexplicably played terrible defense. The referees were god-awful in the last 3 minutes. How a referee does not see the guy literally grab the net while he's dunking the basketball. I don't understand how they don't see it when clearly all the players saw it on the bench. And even the Clipper player was like, oh, crap, I did something wrong when he was walking back. He looked like he shot someone, okay, in his facial expression. And the refs still didn't call it back. Like, I don't understand. And that's not the reason they lost the game. It's a microcosm of the problem. They blew it. They took the foot off the gas. They learned a lesson last night, Mike, I think. I hope they learned a lesson. They're a young team, but they learned a lesson. And but I think those three teams, I feel pretty confident in saying that right now they're in the top four in the East for sure. In my opinion, I think they're the top four teams in the East. Correct? Those three, this 1, 2, 3. Do you agree?
Let's take them one at a time. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So Milwaukee, I think, as you said, is clearly the favorite in the Eastern Conference.
They're doing this without Middleton, too. I mean,
9-1 without Middleton, and they are I believe listening to the low post today that they are currently 30th in the league in fast break points, which typically they're one of the best fast breaking teams in the league because
they're number one in defense, right?
They're number one in defense. And they've sort of flipped where in the past they've been willing to concede open threes. And this year they've sort of decided that they're going to take that away. And so they're up to like seventh in the amount of threes that opponents are making. And so their defense continues to be right now their calling card. Their offense has always been sort of middling, but without Middleton, clearly they're not as good as what they're going to be once they get him back. And Connaughton's been out too. So you have two main pieces of their team that are currently not participating and haven't played in the regular season yet. So you look at where they are, they sit at 9-1. Giannis is averaging 33-14-6 or whatever it is. It's ridiculous. And clearly I think he has established himself as the best player in the league. I think anything that you read or listen to, it seems like that debate, at least for this season as it stands right now, is pretty much over. So I would anticipate that Milwaukee's going to continue to play well. And I know we're not going to talk MVP tonight, but the early favorite has to be Giannis based on both the Bucks play and the way that he's come out of the gate. So I think Milwaukee's a really safe bet to stay at the top of the Eastern Conference. I'll be very surprised if, barring an injury to Giannis, that they are not the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And then let's take the Celtics next. I think you look at what Boston has done, and clearly you and I got to see them up close in the two games that they played against the Cavs, which although they lost both of them, I thought both Brown and Tatum in those two games were both really good in both games against the Cavs. They're obviously missing Time Lord, who was a key part of their defense, which is down significantly. Their offense, I believe, is number one in the league, and their defense is like 23rd. So they haven't been as good defensively as they were last year, especially in that second half of the season where they just kind of took off. But the honest truth is that Robert Williams was the key to that defense once they moved him off and put him on the least threatening member of the opposing team and just kind of let him roam. It freed up their other guys to put pressure on the ball and step out and be able to switch and do all those things. And then he was there back at the rim to clean things up. And without him, it looks a little bit different. But Tatum and Brown both look like they've come back improved versions of themselves. And Malcolm Brogdon has been, I would say, about as perfect an addition to that team as you could imagine. Now, he's got an injury history, and that says that he's probably not going to stay healthy the entire season. I think for Boston, the key is going to be, will he be healthy in April, May, and June? And if he is, then he's going to be a key component for them as they try to get back to the NBA Finals. But I think based on their track record at the end of last year, based on the continued growth of Tatum and Brown, based on the fact that they're going to get Robert Williams back at some point, I do think that what Boston is doing is clearly sustainable. And I expect that they're going to finish in the top four in the conference. The Cavs, I think at this point, what we've seen, it's funny because last night you and I stayed up to watch that Cavs game. And when the score was 112-100, I was seriously just about to type out a text to you saying, man, the way this team has just systematically dismantled the Clippers. Like they come out in the first half and what was it, tied at halftime, I think, like 64 apiece. And basically it was just the two teams were just trading baskets and nobody's really playing any defense.
It looks like an all-star game. I kept thinking it looked like an all-star game a little bit.
It did. There just wasn't – both teams were getting layups. Both teams were getting threes. There was very, very little defensive effort being put in by either team, it felt like. Then the third quarter, it felt like the defensive intensity ratcheted up a little bit. But both teams, I thought, continued to play pretty well. And then the start of the fourth quarter, they came out. Mitchell hit a three. I think Love hit – right there at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then the Cavs just put the clamps down and the Clippers couldn't score. And it just looked like what all these Cavs victories have looked like so far this season, where they just kind of wear you down. And whether it's Mitchell and Garland in the backcourt with their shot making, or whether it's Mobley and Allen at the rim just taking away shots and blocking everything that gets in there. It just felt like, man, like this was a game that they very easily could have lost. This is me again saying this at 112 to 100. And they just came out in the fourth quarter and it was like they imposed their will, which is something that when you look at the history of Cavs teams and my fandom, it's something that I don't always feel like the Cavs did. Even when they were good, it just didn't feel like they could, even the LeBron teams didn't always feel like they could just turn it on. And not that this team had it turned off, but it just feels like there's so many different ways that this team can win. Because I think you said it to me that we have like seven guys that can get a basket and do it in different ways. And I just think Mitchell and Garland offensively are so good that they can get the shot that they want, but then they can also penetrate and kick and get it to somebody else and create a shot for others. So I think offensively, this team is really versatile. Defensively, Mobley and Allen just block everything. And they don't concede layups. They don't concede dunks. They're not afraid to go up and challenge somebody. They're not afraid of being put on a poster. And they both have multiple jumps when they're defending inside. Mobley, in all honesty, when you watch him guard people all over the floor, whether that's perimeter guys out by the three-point line or interior guys inside the lane, I would say the only weakness he has defensively is his strength, in that he can sometimes get bullied. But other than that, defensively, he's about as perfect of a player as you could want because of his length and his ability to move his feet. And then Allen inside is just a menace. The guy blocks everything. He's always in the right position. And having those two guys behind Mitchell and Garland just makes it, it makes their lack of size in the backcourt not quite as glaring as it might be on some other team. So the Cavs are certainly a unique team in the way that they have positionally distributed their guys, because you have two big men who essentially don't really spread the floor at all. Because Mobley, I guess, can shoot threes, but certainly at this point, he's not a knockdown shooter that anybody's afraid of. And Jared Allen is not playing outside the three-point line. And yet, with Mitchell and Garland, they're so good off the bounce and off the catch and shoot that the spacing doesn't seem to be an issue. And then what those two guys, Mobley and Allen, do on the other end is just swallow up everything that comes into the paint. I think the Cavs are going to be there. And although blowing that lead last night was disappointing, I still go back to that moment before I was right about to send you that text, like, hey, this was just a systematic beatdown of the Clippers. Yep. That I just don't see that changing, because this team has, and anybody who's following it closely the way we are, it just feels like this team really likes each other. And you could just see in the post-game celebrations, and they got the junkyard dog necklace and all the different things that they're doing. You see them on the bench, guys are locked in. And to me, that's something that if you've already built that after 10 games and you've built it with the young core of guys that they have, who, let's face it, oftentimes with young teams, right, you have guys that are hunting stats and guys that are playing selfishly because they haven't got their big money. Well, you got Garland, who's already got his money. Clearly, Mobley's going to get his money, and Allen's got his money, and Donovan Mitchell's got his money. So you don't have some of those issues that you sometimes have with young teams where guys are wanting more touches or more shots or this or that. It just seems like this team is completely together, and their four best guys are as good as any top four in the league. And that
And the fifth position is the problem, but then you look at the sixth and seventh position once Rubio comes back. I mean, if Rubio's even 85-90% of what he was, in 08 you have the sixth man of the year runner-up from last year, who's been playing really, really well, too. I mean,
Love's been fantastic. He's shot the ball unbelievably well. He's rebounded the ball unbelievably well, and he's completely bought in.
Is he retiring as a Cav at this point, Mike?
Look, if he keeps playing this well, somebody's going to offer him a big contract.
Then we're not going to be able to pay it. We're not going to be paying.
Well, maybe he takes a hometown discount and decides he's going to stay here and retire as a Cavalier, maybe. But if he continues, if his next 70 games are as good as this first 10, somebody's going to offer him a pretty nice size
contract.
He's
not restricted, right? He's unrestricted, right?
He's unrestricted. Yeah, he'll be unrestricted. So based on the way he's played, certainly if you're the Cavs, you want him back. It's just a matter of what the price is. So we'll see. And then that fifth spot, you've got Dean Wade. You've got LeVert. I guess theoretically you have the shell of what used to be Isaac Okoro and his confidence. I think push comes to shove, as much as LeVert has been really good this season. And
oh, but last night, every time he got the ball at the end of the game, you were worried, right?
He has moments. Like
he's the Bob Wickman of this team.
Yes, he is. Right. That's a good analogy. He does not always inspire the most confidence. And because of the way he plays, which I think has always been sort of touted as his strength, that he's kind of herky-jerky and the way he moves and kind of gets into the lane and he does things in sort of an unorthodox way, which is kind of his strength. And yet, as a fan, it sort of makes you nervous when you watch him that he's going to do something silly. I will say in LeVert's favor this year, I think he's competed really hard defensively. I think he's competed hard on the boards. And I think his passing is way better than it has been with the Cavs last year and then at any point in his career. So all those are positives for LeVert. He's still, I think you'd probably like to see a guy that was a little bit stouter defensively in that spot next to Garland and Mitchell. And Dean Wade's been shooting the heck out of the ball. I still think that he defensively has some limitations. Look, there's no perfect player. It's not like you're going to plug in the perfect guy into that slot. I think LeVert and Wade and even what Okoro can bring on the defensive end, if he can just regain any semblance of confidence on offense, because he does bring a lot to the table defensively. But this team's deep, and if they could add one more guy that could be that starting 3-and-D guy in that position, I think that they'd, man, this team's really good. They're really, really good. I'm not sure you can win an NBA title with a 6'1", 6'2 guy as your best players. I'm not sure you can do that, which is why I continue to maintain what I've said all along. I think when Mobley becomes your best player, and he may never be there, our best offensive player, as good as Garland and Mitchell have been. But I think this team's going to finish in the top four. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Did you see Simmons' tweet?
Yeah, about KG. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, he went to the game last night and said, you know, he was amazed by how much he reminded him of Kevin Garnett, basically. So
Mobley just can't dribble. I mean, right now, anytime he puts the ball on the floor, it almost, I would say 75% of the time he puts the ball on the floor in the half court, it gets poked away at some point. So
he looks like me with ball handling, and that's not good.
He's got to be better. And I think his shot, that will unlock his shot when he can dribble the ball better, because he'll be able to get to more spots and just be able to get his shot off. But defensively, what he does, he's already one of the best defensive players in the league. And
that seven block game was awesome.
And offensively, he's averaging 16 a game, and really without the ability to dribble or without the strength really to post up and punish guys in the lane. So the sky's the limit for Evan Mobley, whether he gets there this year, next year, the year after that. I don't know when he's going to get there, but he's going to be one of the best players in the league at some point. I don't know when that point is, but he's going to be one of the best players in the league at some point.
All right, so then the last team at the top of the East is the Atlanta Hawks. And they would be my surprise of the four. I mean, maybe you would say the Cavs are the surprise of how well they've looked. But I made the prediction that I said they're going to the Eastern Conference Finals, so I'm not obviously that surprised, right, Mike? So I would say the Hawks have looked pretty solid. I actually haven't really watched too much, but like looking at their stats, and they're 7-3. It's not like they've been beating bad teams. They've beaten some bad teams, some good teams. The East has just been wonky, and you know, every night I'm scoreboard watching, saying, "Oh, another good night for the Cavs, because this team beat this team and this team beat this team." And it just seems like for whatever reason, everything's, I don't want to say going the Cavs way, but there's a significant drop off in my opinion. After, I think the top three are pretty set. I really think that, I think they're going to be the top three throughout the rest of the season, barring injuries and major problems. But Atlanta's looked solid. Their stats are pretty good. They've, like I said, they've beaten good teams. They've beaten bad teams. So do I think that they could stay here? I think so. I think the Murray's finally starting to get going. He didn't start. They're doing this well, and Murray didn't have a great start to the year, right, Mike? Like, he hasn't been great.
Well, okay. I mean, here's DeJounte Murray's stats. He's averaging 22 points a game. He's averaging 6.5 rebounds a game. He's averaging 8.5 assists a game. And he's averaging 2.5 steals per game. So I'd say he's off to a pretty good start. He's shooting 45% from the field, only 35% from three, but that's better than Trae Young, who's shooting 30% from three right now. And I would say that the early returns on the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray backcourt are pretty positive. Those two guys, it seems like they've meshed. Murray, that's got to be a career high for him in terms of points per game. And assists, he's probably right there with where he's been consistently in San Antonio. And we know what kind of defender that he's been. So I think those two guys, you figured out that works. And then the question is, okay, what do you get from the rest of the roster? Like, I look at this team, and to me, they're really six guys deep. That's where I think over the course of the long regular season that they're going to struggle a little bit, because you got your top, you got your Trae Young and Murray, then you have DeAndre Hunter, Collins, Capella, and Okongwu. And then after that, it's like the Holiday brothers, Jalen Johnson, the rookie from Duke, AJ Griffin. I'm just Frank Kaminsky. Like, there's just not a whole, my guy Jarrett Culver's on the Hawks roster.
What?
Jarrett Culver, he's played in one game, baby. He's played in one game.
That's crazy.
Made a free throw. Anyway, so I think this team's depth is probably where the issue lies. And we all know that John Collins has been on the trading block for a long time. So maybe at some point they figure out a way to package Collins and get something for him. I think eventually Okongwu is going to end up playing more minutes than Capella. Right now Capella's at 27, Okongwu's at 20. So I don't know. To me, could Atlanta stay here at the four slot? I think it's possible, although clearly to me, out of the top four there, they're the team that is the most vulnerable to dropping out of that top four. I just don't see it with their depth. I'm not sure that they're better than. Okay, so let's look at the other candidates, right, really quickly. And I know we're not going to dive into any of these teams that are in the middle too deeply, but I think your candidates to replace them are Toronto, Philly.
Yeah, well, Toronto's
that's
probably
it. Yes. That's really it, right? I mean, yeah, no, none Siakam's of these other teams, out for you can't while, see anybody else.
So Siakam's out for a little bit, right, because of an abductor strain or something?
Two weeks, I think they said.
They said 2 weeks and then reevaluated. And then you've got, addition by subtraction, the Philadelphia 76ers.
It's great that Philly goes on a run when Harden's out. I love it. Yeah. These guys are like, hey, I get to touch the ball. This is amazing.
It's so much fun when I don't have to stand in the corner. I have to say,
it would be great if they ran off like 10 in a row and then they just told Harden to stay home, man.
I'm gonna admit
something. Go crash at Daryl Morey's house.
So they were talking. We had a speaker today, Mike. It was professional development. As many of you know, we're educators. We had professional development, and this guy was talking about how you've ever been a member of a team, and there's just this one guy that dribbles the ball around, shoots shots, and you're just like, you play pickup, and you just
You start yelling out James Harden?
I may or may not have yelled out James Harden, and it got some laughs. So
that's good.
It's good.
There you go.
And then someone on my team, a boy on my team, we were practicing yesterday, like crossed the kid over and then did the James Harden shimmy and didn't make the three, and I made him do 5 push-ups. And I said he's not allowed to do that again.
There you go.
He's not allowed to do that again. He learned his lesson.
Get that. I said,
listen to the podcast because you'll know my takes on James Harden, and that's not acceptable.
All right, push comes to shove. What do you think for that last spot?
I'm going to stay in Atlanta primarily because Toronto's out with Siakam. They said he was going to be out 2 weeks, like you said. But, I mean, they haven't looked great, and we should have beaten them. And then I don't trust Philly. I don't trust Philly as far as I can throw them. So,
I agree. And the other two candidates from preseason would have been Brooklyn, which we know that's not happening, and Miami. So Miami,
I guess is where we transition to the other part.
We're gonna talk about them. So I would take Toronto over Atlanta, but if Atlanta stays there, I wouldn't be that surprised. But I would pick Toronto to get up into that top four, which is kind of crazy. So I'm looking at Milwaukee, the Cavs, Boston, and Toronto, and I think it's fair to say Atlanta would make it too. I think they're right there.
All right, so now we're going to transition to the bottom of the East. We're going to look at the four bottom teams. I originally planned to go from the bottom up, but I guess let's talk Miami. So the basic premise here is, are they legit? Was the top of the East, and the bottom of the East is, can they turn it around / will they turn it around? So I'm going to say this right now. Of the four teams, I think Miami is the only team that can turn it around. Agree? Disagree?
I think they're probably the only team that wants to turn it around. When you look, right? I mean, the reality is depending on how you look at this, because Brooklyn's not there in the bottom five, clearly Brooklyn at number 11 wants to turn it around. Or maybe they go the other way eventually and they decide we're just trading all these guys and getting whatever we can and just doing a complete teardown. But as of right now, they don't sit in the bottom four. So I don't think Charlotte, Detroit, or Atlanta is going to be, or Orlando, sorry, is going to be really interested in winning more games. Now, they're interested in developing their young players, and at least in the case of Detroit and Orlando, they've got a nice base upon which to build, but Charlotte's in trouble. Miami, clearly, I think, has the best opportunity to turn it around, but I'm not so sure that's what's going to happen. Now, do I expect them to finish where they are? No, I expect them to climb in the standings and for sure be in the play-in. But are they guaranteed to get into the top six in the conference, which is what most everybody thought coming into the season? I think there's some signs that maybe they're not going to climb up into that top six, and maybe they're more like a play-in team. And I think part of the reason why I say that is Kyle Lowry, although he's averaging 13 a game, he's playing 35 minutes a game, which doesn't seem like a good recipe for success long-term for Kyle Lowry. And then you look at Bam is averaging 17 and 8, but I still think that he's a guy that, if you'd have told people a year ago that Bam's going to be averaging 17 and 8, I think people would have said they were a little bit disappointed. I think they were hoping he was going to take another step forward. And to this point in the season, it doesn't really look that much like he's done that. Of course, they inserted Tyler Hero into the starting lineup, which weakens their defense. So maybe they end up going back and putting Tyler Hero as the guy off the bench to provide that offensive spark, and where his defense isn't such a glaring part of the starting lineup. But this team, I don't want to say they're old because they're not really old, but their two most important players are frequently injury prone. And in the case of Kyle Lowry, for sure on the downside of their career. And so I don't expect Miami to stay down in the bottom four, but I also think that they're going to probably end up on the outside looking in and be in the play-in game.
Yeah, they're a play-in candidate for sure. 100%. All right, so then the other teams in the East, Charlotte, they're abysmal. They're not turning it around. Obviously, the whole Bridges thing, I think that's the biggest thing that hurt them, right? I mean, they couldn't.
LaMelo hasn't played yet. I mean, LaMelo hasn't played a game yet. So,
well, that's true.
Which clearly, I mean, he's going to come back. It's not like he's completely gone off the roster, but the fact that your best player hasn't played a game and the guy who was your second best player last year is probably no longer available. Although he got a plea bargain, right? Is that what he did?
Yeah, but I mean, he still meets the criteria of the NBA dealing
Right, I get it. I don't think he's coming back anytime soon.
I don't think he's playing this season, honestly.
He's certainly not playing this season, and he's certainly probably not playing for the Charlotte Hornets when he ever does come back into the league, if that happens. So you just look at their roster, and if you're Charlotte, what are you excited about on this roster? Terry Rozier, Kelly Oubre, Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington, Dennis Smith Jr., Book Knight, Jalen McDaniels. Like, there's nobody there that you say, wow, this guy has a huge upside. This is a guy that when we're ready to win with LaMelo, that we want to make sure that this guy's around. Like, those guys are all nice players. They're fine. But there's nobody there that you'd say that's a foundational piece for when we're ready to start winning and trying to really compete and make the playoffs. So to me, this is one of the worst situations in the whole league. Because they just don't have, there's just not a ton on the roster that gets you excited. And especially when it comes to young guys, there's nothing here other than LaMelo that is even remotely exciting. And as we talked about kind of heading into the season, I think a lot of people had started to sour a little bit on LaMelo and wonder again, is he just a guy who is all show and not a lot of substance when it comes to winning? Now, I don't think it's fair to judge him in this environment, but Charlotte, to me, has one of the worst roster situations, and if I was going to be a GM, I think Charlotte would be one of the last places I'd want to go. I just don't see where they're going with this whole thing.
Yeah, they've looked bad, and they've not, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel other than LaMelo's going to come back, and then they're still going to be bad.
They're definitely going to finish in the bottom four. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay, so then there's Detroit, who's also looked bad. They've had flashes of brilliance. They beat the Golden State Warriors, although I don't know how much of an accomplishment that is at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't look like much anymore.
But Detroit has not looked good either. So I don't think they're turning it around. Cade's looked good, but other than that, I mean, who's looked good on their team?
Cade's been up and down. I think you look at him, he's averaging like 21 a game. He's shooting 43% from the field. He's shooting only 30% from three. Clearly, he's going to be really, 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 really good. But is he top five player in the league good?
No.
I think that remains to be seen.
I'm answering the question. The answer is no.
Okay. I think it's fair. I think that's a fair assessment that he's not going to get there.
Could he be a third team All-NBA player? You could sell me on that. I don't think he's ever getting any higher than that, though.
I think the thing is that he does a lot of things well, but I think one of the knocks on him always has been is he's not that elite uber athlete, and it feels like a guy who does what he does would be much better served with a little bit higher level of athleticism. But this guy's really smart. And I think he's going to be a really good player for a really long time. And I don't know if he tops out in the top five, but I think he's going to be a guy who's going to make multiple all-star teams over the course of his career. And it looks like Jaden Ivey is going to be a guy that's going to develop. He's playing 32 minutes as a rookie. He's averaging 15 a game, 3.5 assists. So he's been, I think, as good as they could have expected. And Duren's been out with an injury. The other rookie kid from Memphis who's young and he's a center, and he's gotten off to a good start, athletic. So I think it looks like they hit on both of those two guys, that they're going to be good building blocks for them to be able to continue to put together as they try to grow this franchise. But you got two good starting blocks in Cade and Jaden Ivey. So I think if you're Detroit, what you want to do is you want to see those guys continue to develop and then lose games. And that's exactly what they're doing. So I think plan is on track in Detroit.
Speaking of the plan is on track, the Orlando Magic, Bol Bol is breakout season. They're 2-9. Mike.
Yeah, look, Bol Bol has been
the second best player on that team. Third best player? Where is he at? I mean, Banchero is clearly Banchero. I'm telling you, Banchero. Now go back to your Kate Cunningham question. Banchero could be a top five player in the NBA based on what I've seen so far. He looks really, really good.
And he's doing it on
a pretty terrible team.
He's doing it on a crap team. Let's put it that way. Orlando is not good. And not only that, but he's doing it in a fairly efficient manner, because the one thing that I think when you hear people talk and you look historically at guys who end up being great players in the NBA, one of the most frequent common denominators of all those guys is they get to the free throw line. And Paolo is getting to the line 8.3 times per game, which for a rookie is super high. And if he's already, and he's shooting his free throws at 77%. So for him to have the level of usage that he has, the ball is basically in his hands. And at this point, he's kind of running their entire half court offense. And to be doing what he's doing at his age and with the size that he has, I don't think there's any doubt that he's a guy that potentially can be a top five player. I think of him as being more of a sure thing to get to that level than Cade. Although I like both players, but if you made me pick one or the other, which one would I rather have? I'd rather have Paolo.
I mean, has he basically, as long provided he doesn't get injured, is he rookie of the year already? Based on what, I mean, he's got to be, right? Like at this point, like, is there anyone that's sniffing him?
No, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I think if he continues anywhere near the pace that he's been at to this point, that there's nobody else that's even coming close. Jabari's played okay in Houston. Chet's obviously out. Ivy's been pretty good. Keegan Murray's been pretty good. Those guys are promising, but nothing like what Banchero's doing. Nothing like him.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on your Eastern Conference?
I think Orlando's fun, man. Orlando is fun. You look at Orlando's roster compared to Charlotte's roster.
Well, yeah, I agree.
Orlando has five dudes that I would rather have before I think I'd rather have.
Are you still including Markelle Fultz in that?
No. So, I mean, right now as it stands, if I look at Charlotte's roster and I look at Orlando's roster, I would rather have, and we could put LaMelo in here. I'm not sure where. LaMelo is probably up higher than I want to admit, but let's put it this way. Beyond LaMelo, you'd rather have Paolo than anybody on Charlotte's roster. Wagner, Wendell Carter Jr., Suggs, and Bol Bol. At least Suggs is young. Bol Bol has been just, I mean, he's ridiculous. Some of his highlights are just hilarious. Because
Mike has a basketball crush on Bol Bol.
I love Bol Bol. I wish Mobley could handle the ball like Bol Bol.
Well, maybe he should do some private training with Bol Bol.
If Mobley had Bol Bol's handle, man, holy cow, be unbelievable.
Yep.
Bol shooting 87% from the line, 35% from three.
Soon you're going to tell me he's an all-star.
He's not an all-star, but he's good. He's good. Look, I pounded the drum for him back 5 years ago that the Cavs should have drafted him. It's almost criminal that Denver couldn't find a way to play him. There's no way that you can watch this guy, and if he's healthy, and tell me that he can't contribute to an NBA team.
Maybe he wasn't healthy.
Which I know he wasn't, right? And they traded him to Detroit, and Detroit rejected his based on his physical. Wouldn't he look good? If you were a Pistons fan, wouldn't you be kicking yourself that we could have had this guy? Now, look, he could break his leg tomorrow and be out of the league, so it's all said with a grain of salt. But when this guy's healthy and on the floor, he's a good NBA player and potentially a lot better than that.
Yeah. All right, so that wraps up the Eastern Conference, Mike.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today, The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
We're going to move to the West now. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. We're at 47 minutes, man.
I know. We're
we're going to have to go quick. The West is going to have to get short-changed.
Well, here's the thing. The West is a little more dicey because when we talk about the top four teams, there's a lot of teams that are right there. So
does that mean we're going to talk more or less?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to group these teams – we're just going to look at the top four as they currently stand right now, Mike.
Okay.
And then we'll address the other ones next week. Is that fair?
That sounds good.
We're making an agreement now. So don't blur the lines, Mike.
We're not going to talk any details about any teams that we think we might bump into that situation. Maybe mention a team. You're not mentioning a team?
Don't blur the lines again, Mike. Okay.
All right. I won't blur it too much.
The Utah Jazz, 9-3. Lauri Markkanen, MVP? I'm just kidding. No, but also, like, listen, Utah, I don't think that this is sustainable for the Utah Jazz. I don't think that them being a top four seed is sustainable. I think it's kind of awesome that they're doing this after they traded Mitchell away. They traded their best two players, and now all of a sudden they are doing great. I think it's a cool story. I think Markkanen's played really, really well. He's played out of his mind. Clarkson's looked good. Connolly's looked good when he's been out there. I just don't see how they can sustain this for the whole season, Mike. So I'm not quite a believer. I know they're 9-3, and it's 12 games is a good sample size, but two of those games are against the Lakers. So that does not mean anything to me. So I'm not sold that they are going to be in the top four at the end of this.
They're out. Now, not that I don't like the individual players that they have, not that their start hasn't been incredible, but if you're going to bet on them continuing to be in the top four, you have to bet on two things. One, you have to bet on what they're actually doing on the floor being sustainable. And two, you have to bet on the fact that if it is sustainable, that Danny Ainge and the Utah Jazz front office is going to allow it to continue to be sustainable and that they're not going to make moves to try to make this team worse. I mean, honestly, they've already won 9 games. So when you start talking about trying to get to the top of the lottery odds, that's a lot of games to bank in the first 12 to think that you're going to get down into one of those bottom 3 or 4 spots where you're going to get a 12 to 14% chance of landing Wembanyama. So maybe they just ride it out and say, hey, we caught lightning in a bottle here and let's try to maximize this and be the best team that we can possibly be. Or do they go the other way at some point? But if they keep winning at this pace, you don't have much longer before you're going to have to pull the plug on this thing. And look, they have some guys that if they wanted to trade, that there are contending teams that would be interested in Mike Conley. There are contending teams that would be interested in Clarkson. They've got some pieces that they could move if they wanted to move off of them and get some other draft picks. I'll tell you the most encouraging thing about the Utah Jazz from my perspective.
What's that?
It looks like Agbaji is not really going to do much this season, which makes me feel good that it would be bad if he was over there with Utah averaging 15 a game as a rookie. He's yet to, if I'm not mistaken, he's yet to make a three, if I'm not mistaken.
He hasn't
made a three all year. So for a guy that was touted as being a 3-and-D guy and we're 11 games in and he hasn't made a three, and I know he's averaging 11 minutes a game, so it's not like he's not playing at all. He's played in 6 games, 11 minutes. So I guess
He got sent to the G League today.
Okay, well, yeah, that's probably a good move. to get him some minutes and let him play. But I would feel bad if he was tearing it up. Not that I'm rooting against him in any way, shape, or form, but it does make me, I don't know. I feel good that he's not
vindicated.
I feel good he's not setting the world on fire. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right.
So Utah is going to drop out.
Okay. Next one, the Phoenix Suns. I think they're in, Mike. I know we were down on them.
Yes, we were.
We were down on them.
Both of us took the under on Phoenix, I believe.
I'm not thinking that's good right now, but we'll see. I mean, it's early still. It's only 10 games in, but they've looked good. And they've continued to look good despite just the zaniness that was the offseason for them. I'm just going to say congrats to Phoenix. We've talked about them at length. Like, Booker's good.
Okay, so what happens now, right? Cam Johnson, you saw that, right?
Yeah, he's out 2 months, right? Is that 2 months?
Right, so has Crowder come back to the starting lineup?
I think he asked you, right?
He hasn't played. He hasn't even been with the team, I don't think.
I know, because they told him, he said he wanted to get traded, right?
Is he coming back? They're going to call him up, and he's going to start coming in. They're going to try to reintegrate him into the team. That doesn't seem likely. So that seems like a pretty big blow, because I got to believe Crowder's done. I don't think he's coming back to play for the Jazz. And so
his Suns?
Suns, yeah. What did I say? Oh, Jazz. Yeah, so he's not coming back to play for the Suns. And losing Cam Johnson for a month or two is definitely going to hurt them.
I'm willing to take a contract.
Yeah. I think Phoenix, we all thought that their chemistry issues and what happened to them in Dallas. I honestly think that first night, on opening night, the fact that they came back against Dallas and won that game, I know it sounds silly, but if they would have lost that game, I'm not sure what kind of tailspin that team would have went into from a mental standpoint. And it feels like they've righted the ship, and whatever's going on with Ayton or not going on with Ayton, it seems like they've kind of worked things out. And look, they won 64 games last year in the regular season. So it's not like they don't have it in them, but Chris Paul, a year older, all the Ayton stuff, it just felt like, man, I'm not sure that they're going to stay there, but Booker's been really good. Ayton's been kind of what he's been for the last few years. Bridges has been really good this season. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a good chance they stay there, but I think there's also a decent chance that I could see them falling out, because there's some good teams behind. I'm going to say they fall out. I'm going to say they fall out. Oh my God.
You're going to say the next team's going to fall out too, right?
Portland's definitely going to fall out.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've overachieved this year. I agree. The Jazz one is, of the two, you think the Jazz one's more realistic that they hang in there, right?
The Jazz versus Portland?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, Portland's more realistic.
Oh, I disagree.
really?
Yeah, I just – because
but Utah, look, everybody – universally, everybody had Utah picked as one of the four worst teams in the league.
Universally. Well, they're not the four worst teams in the league.
Right, but there's a reason why everybody said they were one of the four worst teams in the league.
Because they want to lose.
Yes, and they also thought that I think the reason why they're winning is because their players individually, people are like, oh, yeah, you know, I like that guy, or that guy's pretty good, or yeah, that guy's a veteran. But everybody looked at it and goes, I don't think that mix makes sense. And for whatever reason, the chemistry on that team and the mix has been right. But I still think that ultimately the NBA in so many ways is a you-are-what-you-are league. They're really, I know there are surprises, but there's not really that many surprises where a team that everybody thinks is going to be terrible ends up being good. So I think Utah falls off. I think the danger with Portland is what's Dame's health throughout the course of the season. If Dame's healthy, they have enough pieces around him. Look, I still think they're going to fall out of the top four, but if you ask me to pick between them and Utah, I would say Portland is more likely to stay up there. But I don't think either team will be there. But I would say the Jazz is more likely to fall out and Portland's more likely to stay in.
Okay. I just don't have any faith in Portland. I don't know why.
Look, it's not unfair, but I do think that their starting lineup is pretty good. And it makes sense when you think about, you got Lillard and Simons in the backcourt. We know what Lillard is, and Simons is averaging 22 a game and shooting the ball really well. Jeremy Grant, when he's not your first option, which he's clearly not on this team, he brings good defense and he can do some things from that power forward position. And then Nurkic, when he's healthy, has been an effective center on both ends of the floor, again, when healthy. And Josh Hart is a guy who just plays extremely hard and is one of those really good 3-and-D role players. And that starting five is a good starting five in the NBA. And then you look at their bench. They got Shadon Sharpe as a rookie. He's playing 20 minutes a game. He's averaging almost 9 a game. I think they got to be really happy with where he's at. And they've got some decent depth behind those guys that can come in and be functional. So I think, like I said, they are more likely to stay in the top four than Utah is.
Okay. All right, and then the last team, we're saying they're staying.
Denver's going to be in the top four.
Denver's going to be in the top four.
Denver's going to stay in the top four. Jokic is what he is. I mean, he's an offense unto himself. And
Murray's looked better. Murray's looked better, right?
He's starting to come around. You can see a little bit more of his athleticism starting to come out. I think for a guy, look, anytime somebody's coming back from an ACL, it takes you a while to regain that confidence when you're going full out in game conditions. Like, I know he's been playing, he's been practicing or whatever, but there's nothing like stepping out there and having to play in real NBA basketball games. And so Jokic's stats, at least on the scoring side of it, are down. He's probably down 7 points from where he was last year, but his rebounding's down a tiny bit, but he's up to almost, he's almost averaging a triple-double. He's at 20, 10, and 9.3. So you could say what you want about where Jokic is at, but there's not a guy that I think you can trust any more in the league that night in and night out, he's just going to put up his numbers and help his team win. He's just a winning player. And Porter and Murray have been healthy to this point. And if both of those guys stay healthy, this team's going to be right there at the top of the conference come the end of the season. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay. All right. We're done with the West top. Now we're going to go to the bottom, Mike.
Okay.
All right. So the four teams at the bottom are Golden State, Sacramento, the Lakers, and Houston. Okay, I'm going to say right now, I'm willing to bet that we're going to both agree on Houston is not turning it around.
Houston does not want to turn it around, and Houston is not going to turn it around. Like I said earlier about Orlando, I think Houston has a roster that you could be excited about if you're a Rockets fan. They at least have guys that you can convince yourself or talk yourself into as, hey, these guys are foundational pieces for what we want to do. So Jalen Green, he's averaging 20 a game. He's only shooting 40% from the field, but his athleticism just leaps off the screen at you when you watch him play. And the danger with him, I think, and same thing with Kevin Porter Jr., who we had here in Cleveland.
He might throw soup at you.
Well, you just wonder, guys that are have already a sort of a propensity to be shoot first guys or be a little wonky as teammates and as people, which in the case of Kevin Porter Jr. is well documented. When you put those guys repeatedly into losing environments and you just lose and lose and lose and lose, at some point it gets difficult to be able to overcome that. That's the thing that I worry about with those two guys in particular. And then you look at Jabari Smith, he's averaging almost 30 minutes a game, scoring 10 points. And he's been, I would say, okay, kind of what people expected of him. He's shooting 6 threes a game. He's only shooting 30% right now from the three, but he's shooting almost 90% from the line. The guy clearly has a beautiful stroke, especially for a guy who's 6'10 or 6'11, whatever he is. And he's a good athlete, good defender. He's going to be somebody that's going to be a core part of what they're going to do. And then Şengün is another guy that you can talk yourself into if you're a Rockets fan, that this team, when they get good, that he's still going to be a part of it. So they at least have some pieces, but they don't want to win games as an organization, and they don't have the firepower or the personnel to actually win games on the floor, which is the reality, an ideal situation, because their young guys are getting minutes, they're developing. And my only concern there would be, again, what kind of culture am I putting these young guys in day after day when all you're doing is losing. There's danger in that. There's danger in that. Let's put it that way.
Makes sense. All right. The Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers are staying at the bottom. There's no way they crawl out of this bottom
four. They're terrible.
There's no possible way. I told you when I watched that game with the Cavs, and I've watched bits and pieces of other Lakers games, but you watch Anthony Davis, and if you just zoomed out and you blurred out everybody's faces and you had no idea that Anthony Davis was formerly one of the five best players in the league, you would have no clue that Anthony Davis was a top 20, top 30, top 50. I don't know how far down the list you have to go, but he just looks slow. He looks disinterested. Old. He doesn't look explosive at all. He looks like, I agree. He looks old. He looks like a guy who has put on a little weight in his older years, and he just can't move very fast anymore. He still has some skill, but he can't do anything at full speed, and he just doesn't look twitchy. He doesn't move the same way on either end of the floor, and it's sad to say, but he just is a shell of himself. And Father Time, we've been talking about it for 4 or 5 years on the podcast. Father Time is slowly starting to snatch the momentum from LeBron James. You can see it. You can see it mostly in the fact that he just doesn't turn it on. And maybe you can say...
Is it because of his team, though?
Partly. I think that's part of it. But I also think that 3-4 years ago, he would have put more of his stamp on games to at least try to see, hey, can I explore the outer limits of what I can do to see what I can do to carry this roster? And now you just see he just isn't capable of doing that. I mean, he still has moments. He has some nice drives, and he still has the strength to be able to get to the rim against just about anybody he wants to. The problem is he just can't do it possession after possession.
And by the way, he's averaging 24-9-7. Right now.
It's ridiculous. Like you watch him play,
and he's like,
there's never been a guy who puts up stats easier than LeBron. Like it's incredible when you watch him, and it looks like, okay, like he's out there. I see him. And part of it is you're judging him on what he looked like in the past, which isn't fair to him, but he doesn't have what he needs around him, and he doesn't have the athleticism and the burst and what he needs in order to be able to carry a roster like that on his own. And look, he should be the second best player on this team, but he's not. He's still the best player on the team. And the fact that Anthony Davis has cratered has put this team in a really bad position. And no matter what they do, let's say they stand pat with the current roster they have, it's not working out. They're not getting out of the bottom four. And the alternative is, I guess you trade Russ and maybe you get something back that improves your standing. But even then, I'm not so sure that there aren't 12 teams better than them in the standings, no matter what they do. And I guess you could trade Anthony Davis, which was floated out there this week. Good luck. I don't know what you're getting. I wouldn't trade for Anthony Davis if I was another team. Not based on what I'm seeing. So I think Los Angeles stays in the bottom four.
I agree. All right, the Sacramento Kings. I think they stay in the bottom four. They're bad.
Nah. They're going to get out of the bottom four.
Who are they going to pass, Mike?
Who are they going to pass? Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City wants to lose. They're going to pass Oklahoma City and San Antonio. Those are the two teams they're going to pass. I'm not saying Sacramento's good, because I don't think they are. But
okay.
From an offensive standpoint and from what you have in De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, there's enough there. Keegan Murray's going to continue to get better. There's enough here that they're better than those two teams. And Sacramento wants to win games.
I'm not here to coach the regular season.
Right. They're not here to lose games. So those other teams don't care if they win or lose. and say what you want. That's different.
Question.
Look, their starting lineup, the Kings starting lineup is made up of five functional NBA players. And I would say they have seven or eight, maybe even more than that, good NBA players on their team. So I think this team's going to put it together. And look, put it together doesn't mean that I think they're going to go 44 and 38. They're not. But I do think they're going to get out of that bottom four.
Okay. Golden State's getting out of the bottom four too.
Yeah, they're going to get out of the bottom four. Now, they've certainly had their issues and haven't looked good and have lost a lot of surprising games. But the pedigree is too strong for that team to stay down here in the bottom four. But they may not get back up into the top six, but they're not going to stay in the bottom four. I don't see any way that that happens. And you wonder internally how much that Draymond punch affected them and how much of it is they're trying to develop those young guys at the same time that they're still trying to roll out the veterans and win games, which is that's a tough needle to thread. And so they've been able to do it successfully. Obviously, they won the title last year, but maybe this year is the year it catches up because they kind of traded away some of that veteran depth with the idea that Wiseman and Moody and Kuminga would be ready to step in, and it doesn't appear like that's been a seamless transition. And then the whole Draymond thing, just who knows what's going on in that locker room and what guys are thinking and how that impacts the way they're playing. We'll see. I'll be curious to watch when they play the Cavs later this week what that game looks like. I'll be anxious to get a closer look at the Warriors. I've only seen bits and pieces of what they've done to this point, but obviously I'll get a chance to watch when they play the Cavs.
Yep. All right. Mike, anything else? We kind of whipped through the West there. We'll have to do spend more time talking about the West next week. We'll start with the West teams we didn't really talk about. We'll flip-flop the order.
We can flip-flop it. Well, I think the only other thing to talk about very briefly, and I guess we'll just ask the question, is Kyrie ever coming back to Brooklyn?
I find it hard to believe that he does.
Is he coming back to the league?
Yes, he'll be back in the league.
This season?
I think that it's like 50-50.
All right, here's my take. I think he's done in Brooklyn. I think he's done for this season. And it's hard to imagine that he's done for his entire career. But, man, he's a stubborn guy. He's a weird guy. And I don't know. Does he do all the things that the Nets have required of him? I guess he doesn't have to if he goes to a different team. And clearly, whatever money was out there for him is not going to be there. I can't imagine any team's going to offer him any kind of long-term contract that's worth any real amount of money compared to what he could have gotten in the past. Does he become a one-year bargain basement guy that you sign where there's a super high ceiling that if it works out, great, and there's a very low floor because we only signed him for the veteran minimum, or we only signed him for the mid-level exception or whatever. Like, he's not going to get a big long-term contract from anybody. And if he does, good luck to that team.
Yeah. I think he's going to end up playing at some point this season, but
I don't, I think he's done. I think he's done.
Okay. You're completely within the right to say that because he is a weird dude.
I don't know where he ends up next year. That'll be the question.
Lakers?
Depends on how desperate you are.
Well, the Lakers are going to be pretty desperate.
Maybe AD will be on another team at that point and LeBron will be on his way to Cleveland.
Let's sign me up for that.
Let's hope not. God, let's hope not.
Sign me up.
No. Absolutely not. Please no. Please no. You saw that tweet. He said something about their players. Seems like they're just all locked in. They don't have anything else going on.
Yeah. Listen, he wants back, baby. I saw someone tweet after the Cavs beat them. LeBron crawling off or going to the locker room and knocking on the door holding on a sign that says,
something along the lines of like save me or please take me back or.
I just look the theoretical. I'm gonna have to start calling him in respect to the Cavs. I'm gonna have to start calling him theoretical LeBron James. Theoretical LeBron James would fit pretty nicely into the slot that we talked about earlier, but the real guy, I would be so nervous based on the way that this team is bought in. And maybe that'll change when they start losing games or if something goes haywire, but to bring LeBron and everything that he brings with him onto this team would make me really, really nervous. That's not to say it couldn't work, because theoretical LeBron would be almost a perfect fit for what they need. But, man, I'd be nervous. I wouldn't do it. If it was me, I wouldn't do it.
Okay. All right. Anything else? We don't have any Browns to talk about this week, so we'll save that for next week's podcast.
Sounds like a plan.
I do want to congratulate a team today, Mike.
Okay.
The Georgetown Hoyas.
Yeah.
They got a W.
Okay. Over.
That's inconsequential. That was their first win. They were on a 21-game losing streak. They hadn't won since December of 2021.
Wow. The Georgetown Hoyas have fallen on hard times. It's a long way from Big Monday, baby.
Yeah, let's see who they beat tonight. Georgetown basketball. They beat... I can't even tell.
Well, you know
they beat Coppin State.
Okay, there you go. Well, you saw my alma mater opened up with a win over Northern Kentucky last night, and then we got the big game on Thursday. I'm disappointed that you can't be a part of it.
Well, I'll be in Columbus, so
I know. Yeah. I was gonna, you know, we were gonna. I would have had you go down together.
Well, you see, BW already played Cleveland State, and they actually hung with them.
Well, Cleveland State, you saw they lost to Notre Dame College.
Oh my God, what's wrong with Cleveland State?
Not the University of Notre Dame. We're talking about Division II Notre Dame College from here in Northeast
Ohio. What's going on at Cleveland State?
There was three Richmond Heights graduates that are on the
Notre Dame
Falcons. So congrats to them and Cleveland State. Hopefully they'll get it turned around. But yeah.
But BW hung with them. I saw that. So
we'll see. It'll be interesting. Maybe, I'm looking forward to going down and seeing
Kent State is favored to win the MAC, Mike. I was talking about this with
they're good.
A few of my coworkers today, when we had our PD, you know, I was getting professionally developed, and we were talking, and I brought you up, Mike.
All right,
because they were a bunch of Kent State alums, and I was like, oh, the guy I do the podcast with, Sincere, broke his one record last year, and he still has the one. And I used your favorite quote. I used your quote.
All right, They just kept throwing me the ball. You just kept throwing me the ball. We'll see who wins that game. I need to sign off, Mike.
My daughter is calling for me.
All right, you're good. All right, thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate it. We will check you out on our next NBA episode next week. And be sure to check out all our great interviews on the Hoopheads Pod. We'll see you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.